Welcome back. Episode 10. Now we're into double digits. Scissortail Podcast. Porter Cunningham with you. As always, my good friend, co-host Will Bowersox. Will, say hello to the people.
Greetings. And if I've learned anything about myself, and apparently you as well in the last week, it's that apparently I'm the propaganda mouthpiece for a club whose attendance figures are artificially inflated by as much as 95%, that we're not even spewing as much propaganda as true front office stooges should be, that I'm a bigot and a homophobe, and that apparently through my involvement with a team who commingles charity and business, I'm also a carpetbagger huckster of the worst kind. And so are you, Porter. But let's put a pin in that until free talk.
All right, so some strong comments out the gate from Will. We are going to have a huge free talk segment this episode, but we have something else big to talk about before we get there.
Something historic, even.
Something historic. The very first NASL
match
soccer game in Oklahoma was played Saturday night.
That's not entirely true because there was a Tulsa team in the previous NASL.
That's true. In this incarnation of the NASL.
In Oklahoma City.
In the modern
City.
Era, you might say.
In the modern era in Oklahoma era. City.
So let's talk about that. First of all, some corrections from our last episode, as pointed out by the loyal company of the River Valley. Daryl Fordyce is a striker. I think I called him an attacking center mid or a forward. True striker.
Semantics.
FC Edmonton did make the postseason in the first year of the league, 2011. So they have that banner hanging up somewhere.
I was quite impressed with FC Edmonton. Very organized in the back. They have a strong identity as a team, for sure.
Yeah, so
their keeper is a stud.
Indeed. Obviously, the result was a 0-0 draw, a scoreless draw, which we'll get into later. Attendance, a sold-out 6,416 people at Miller Stadium, plus about 200 standing-room-only tickets.
I think it's great. You know, what's funny about that is I was real nervous. Look, I'm an amateur podcaster, not affiliated with the club at all. But I was legitimately nervous yesterday that there were going to be like 300 people at this game.
I definitely have some crow to eat because I was expecting sub 1,000 people there.
Yeah. Well, we're sitting up in the press box, which is a whole other conversation that's hilarious. But we're in the press box and we keep looking out over our right and we can see the ticket office. And there are
one of four ticket offices.
The ones that we're looking at, there are people, you know, in line to buy tickets. It's almost halftime, and the line is four rows of cars deep into the parking lot.
Yeah, at least 30 or 40 people deep.
So let's put a pin in that as well, because there's some potential controversy about the ticket numbers being inflated. We'll talk about that later on. But look, first impressions, the facilities were truly first class. From the stadium to the press box to... we got to go to the post game, kind of in the wellness center, which is where the locker rooms were. The turf looked great from our vantage point. Obviously, we weren't on it. We were running on it. But it sounds like it played well. And I just think you don't want to look too deeply. This is just one game, right? But it makes me very cautiously optimistic moving forward.
Sure.
What do you know, general atmosphere, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was great. I thought... manufactured numbers or not, the crowd was loud. The crowd was into it. It seemed like a very soccer knowledgeable crowd. Strong Hispanic contingent in the crowd, which is great. I think that's what the club was going for. The diversity of the crowd was nice. Everyone seemed to be having a good time. You know, they had the food trucks inside the stadium. They had quite a bit of stuff for people to do besides just watch the game. And then, as we all know, unfortunately, due to extraneous events, there was no beer sales at the game, which we can maybe talk about that later. I don't know if we want to dive that far into it.
We'll talk about it later.
So hopefully they had a nice area set up for a beer garden, and that was empty because obviously they had no beer to sell. So they add that in next week, and going forward, we'll see if this is something that they can sustain. That's the biggest thing for me from a general atmosphere point of view is you knocked it out of the park with the first game. Now you've set yourself up to continuously.
Now the hard work really begins.
Yeah.
Now the hard work really begins.
So just 1 week from this game, you've got game two. So can you do it again for game two and then keep people entranced into, you know, throughout the season?
Operationally, I think they did a really good job. There are things that I wouldn't have known went wrong. The only reason I know that things went wrong is because I was in the vantage point that we were in.
Mm-hmm.
So operationally, look, first game, they were already on a compressed time schedule. Some things that they could have done better. Those will certainly improve just as a function of experience. But yeah, you know, that's just kind of our impression. So certainly a positive outcome. You know, the game could have gone better, but it also could have gone a lot worse. So let's move on. Segment two, we'll talk a little bit more about the actual game, get into some technical information from the game. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
All right, we're back. Episode 10, doing a little recap of the inaugural home opener for Ryo OKC. We're going to jump into a segment that we like to call Tech Talk. So we've covered
This segment's debut.
Yes. Lots of historical firsts. We've covered a little bit of the atmosphere of the stadium in the evening, the facilities. So now let's talk about what happened on the field. So Will, what formation were we in most of the evening?
You know, I think, by the way, just as a quick aside, I think it's easy for people in our shoes to try to sometimes fit a square peg into a round hole when it comes to things like formation and style. I think the team played fluidly in formationally and situationally. So there, I was trying to count as best I could at different times. It looks like in the opening stages of the match, they were sitting in kind of like this, like 3-5-2-1. And then after the red card happened, they were pretty much sitting in a 4-2-3-1 the whole time. I mean, they definitely played an attacking brand of football, and hopefully I got the math right on the 3-5-2-1. I always get that wrong, but you know, the things that I took away from the technical aspect of the game is that in that 4-2-3-1, Derek Boateng was playing in one of the central defensive midfielder spots, and really, I think is a function of A, who he is as a player, and B, the position he's playing, and that's kind of like one of the key roles in that position.
I mean, he really set the tone. He had some hard fouls early on, and he basically came out and said, you're not going to be able to run through our midfield.
He set the tone going both ways,
yeah,
right?
So yeah.
He was bossing the midfield and making great outlet distributing passes, some one-touch looks. He was trying to spring Finley a couple times on the break. And then on the defensive side, he made some really good professional fouls. Now he got a yellow card. I think for me, the yellow card was an accumulation caution. Just he made a couple of rash tackles, but he really set the tone.
So no goals, 0-0 draw, so no goals to report. Like you said, discipline. Mr. Derek Boateng got a caution early on. I was trying to look through the match
I think report. And I don't want to keep coming back to this too much, but I think if Boateng played all 90, he's the man of the match for me.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that going forward on the attack, the wingbacks, the fullbacks, the guys who are on the back line of the defense playing on the outside of the formations, those guys were getting way forward in the attack.
Yeah, yeah. Michel on the left and Kusuke Kimura on the right. He was making some good overlapping runs.
Yeah.
Velasquez also got a caution in the 34th minute, but the major turning point of the game was Albert Watson, the captain for FC Edmonton, one of their two central defenders, straight red in the 29th minute for denying an obvious goal scoring opportunity.
Porter, is that a red card for you?
You know, to the letter of the law, yes, I think it is. Because who was it? Was it Robbie Finley or Marvin Chavez who was in on goal basically there? And he knocked it past him, and Watson either lazily or intentionally left his leg out there, and there was enough contact for, you know, it was right on the edge of the box. And from my vantage point, it surely looked like Matt Van Okkel was going to get to the ball before Marvin Chavez did. Even if he was through, but by definition of the word opportunity, yeah, I think the referee made the correct decision there.
I think if it's earlier in the game, it's not a red, but by that point, there had already been a yellow card and some chippy fouls. But look, it doesn't matter. Like you said, the letter of the law. Clearly, it happened. Both teams reacted to it. It is what it is. You know, like 7 times out of 10, that's a red card.
Yeah.
In any other game. So let's talk about substitution patterns. One thing that we've got a question about is, I don't know that we have this question, but certainly it's not hard to say. You know, Rayo has one of the older, by age, one of the older teams in the league. So, you know, on the one hand, you get experience. On the other hand, you maybe have some guys that have some tired legs. So we saw Boateng get subbed out for Menjivar. We saw Velasquez, who's not that old, come off for Billy Forbes.
Which, by the way, let me interrupt you there, because at first I thought, you know, it's interesting. Why are they coming out? And then I put two and two together, and they both were already on cautions.
Yep. Yeah,
so
of course,
you're playing a man up, and you've got 3 substitutions available. Sub off the guys with yellow cards. And
yeah, why lose the obvious advantage? And then the third substitution was I'm saying these out of order. The Boateng sub was first. The Velasquez sub was second. And the final sub, Robbie Finley, came off for Samaras and probably
Big Sam.
I have it written down. Let me just look.
Which I saw, speaking of discipline, I don't know that there was any given out, but I saw somebody tweet that it took George less than 2 minutes to get his both hands around the neck of an FC Edmonton player. So I don't know if, he kind of felt like, and this is something he's going to have to face all season. If these guys are a little bit beneath him or they
resent that he is this talented guy and that there's like this presumed all-star team that they're
sure.
playing.
Sure, or it's either that or they really aren't as good. And so he's so much better that, as we see, you know, scale it down in our indoor games, the better players get hacked a lot by the not as good players. So he's going against defenders that aren't up to the level that he's played. And he probably gets pissed off that, you know, they're tearing his ankles up.
Sure.
Sure. And then there was comments about the
In soccer, as in life, getting dragged down to the mud by those beneath you can be very frustrating.
Who was our assistant coach that always said that in high school? Drove the Mercedes. The beautiful Merc. He wasn't English. He was Welsh.
Steven. Dude, you just dropped an F-bomb, man.
Oh, man. Sorry.
All right, well, look, I thought that Samaras played really well. Obviously, limited action. Obviously, his fitness is probably not all the way there, which is not surprising. When he came on, I was literally talking to Porter, and I said, man, Samaras, like, he can't outrun these guys. What's going to happen? And right as I was saying that, he combined with Billy Forbes on this beautiful 1-2-1-2 that cracked open the Edmonton defense and led to Rayo's far and away best chance to score a goal all game. I think should have been a goal, but it says a lot about Edmonton's keeper that he kept out these two kind of cracked shots.
Great double save.
So
big knockout, big rebound that came out to the top of the 18, and then I don't know who, one of the midfielders was out there and just ripped one, and he was there for that. You know, he recovered and made that second save too. So
well, let's wrap this segment up. It was really nice to see that the team played attacking football, both in possession but also defensively. They were pressing Edmonton selectively, especially outside of the final third. They were pressing pretty well. I think they ended the game with like 65% possession for. They badly had more passes, which I think is a function, A, of their style of play, B, being a man up. And look, you don't want to extrapolate from a small sample size, but certainly some positives to build on. I think the narrative is a lot different if they ended up did scoring a goal. And there were other scoring opportunities as well.
Yeah.
Nothing I thought was a major negative, but it could all change next week. They could lose next week. And so unless you have any other comments.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, we were fortunate enough to go to the press conference and we have audio, but we're doing this on a short timetable, so we're not going to. You're just going to have to listen to us and not Coach Marcino.
Read the same quotes and the news okay.
Right. So basically, Chris Brannick asked the question that we were going to ask. Essentially, Coach Marcino, are you happy with the result? And I think his answer, paraphrasing here, was basically, I'm not happy with the result. Obviously, would have liked one of those balls to go in, but very happy with the way that they played. They did exactly what you're supposed to do when you're a man up for 60 minutes. Dominate the game. Create good chances, and eventually those chances will go in. So it didn't happen tonight, but...
And I think his answer would have been the same if we had lost. You know, let's say that Edmonton gets a fluke goal on the break. Well, we still dominated the game, and that's sometimes just the way that the soccer ball bounces. Yeah. So anyway, that wraps up Tech Talk, and we will come back and talk next about next week's match versus the Carolina Railhawks. Stay with us.
All right, we're back. Segment three, we're going to do a little preview of the second NASL game in Oklahoma in the modern era. Quick turnaround for the team. The Carolina Railhawks, I should say, come to Miller Stadium this Saturday, April 9th.
More like the Jailhawks, am I right?
So, Carolina.
7 p.m., Miller Stadium.
Yep.
UConn, Oklahoma.
Buy your tickets early because, as we all know, the ticket lines will be long. So get some season tickets or visit the box office this week. Yesterday, Carolina won 2-1 against Minnesota United FC.
Heavily favored Minnesota United FC.
Yeah, I guess.
Which is a little unfair. I think people are saying, well, they're going to the MLS, so they must be MLS.
They've been pretty highly anointed, and I know we saw on the Total NASL Roundtable Thursday night, all of us picked Minnesota United except for Jason from Off the Rails. He went fanboy.
Homer call of the week.
Picked Carolina and was correct. He actually has picked everything correct so far.
Oh, wow.
He picked a Carolina win.
He picked a Rio draw.
Wow. He picked a Miami Fort Lauderdale draw. And then he predicted a Cosmos win today. So we'll see if that comes true, and he'll be leading the roundtable in predictions.
Got it. Well, Porter, it's brief. It's concise. Give us some context onto who Carolina is.
So they were a USL club from 2007 to 2009.
Humble beginnings.
Then they, as